This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott.
I was just about to check the contents of the stomach anyway. Ah, something's embedded in the stomach lining. Looks like a microchip.
May I see that for a second?
A clip there from NCIS New Orleans, one of several crime procedurals that have made death, gore, and gristle common on television. With their spunky pathologists and well-lit labs, these shows reduce the emotional freight of death to just blood, bone, and tissue. What they don't do is prepare even seasoned viewers for the shock of facing real corpses during a real autopsy. Rachel Wilkinson attended an autopsy at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and wrote about it for The Atlantic. And Rachel, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How did you end up in an autopsy room at UPMC?
Well, I was actually in a medical writing class. It was not easy. I didn't start out, in other words, sort of planning to go to an autopsy, but I met the full-time hospital pathologist at UPMC, Dr. Jeffrey Nine. I met him, and within the span of about 5 minutes, he said really reverent, beautiful things about his job, and then at the same time sort of made a really funny joke. And I thought, okay, there's something weird going on in this room where they're navigating between the sacred and the profane, and I knew I wanted to get in and see it. So I did sort of a dry run where I saw the room and there was nobody there, and then I went when they didn't have a case, and then they got me in to see an actual case.
So that's a teaching hospital, correct?
Correct.
How often do they conduct autopsies at UPMC?
Because it's not like NCIS, so it's not homicides. It's whenever someone has a relative die in the system and the next of kin elects to have that autopsy performed. So it comes out to about one a day, a little less, or about 350 a year.
Well, they are part of the formula on many police and crime shows. So what are some of the ways that autopsies as seen on TV differ from the real thing?
A forensic autopsy, you're trying very hard to sort of look at it from a legal perspective, and it usually has to be done quickly, and you're trying to get information out, sometimes to lawyers, to other doctors, whoever. Whereas hospital autopsy, they assume the cause isn't homicide, and so in a big teaching hospital like UPMC, they take a lot more time. Mm-hmm. So on NCIS, they can do 40 minutes an hour per autopsy, and you're going to have multiple bodies per day coming in. But the one a day of just sort of natural causes in the hospital system, they can take their time. And because it's students working, they can take up to 6 hours to do that.
Wow. Were you the only person there attending for the first time?
Yes.
So students are usually, they're pretty well seasoned in this. Did you get any warning or tips for how to prepare?
I was told it's totally acceptable to faint, and that trained professionals, medical students, everybody faints. And so to be prepared for whatever natural reaction my body was going to have. And some of the really new people, they told me the smell is sometimes the hardest part. So they will wear like Vaseline under their noses. I said, no, I'm going to do it all in, all natural. And it wasn't as bad as I thought.
And you didn't faint.
Didn't faint.
Did you know anything about the identity of the person that you were witnessing the autopsy on?
Because of privacy reasons, they kind of wanted to hide his identity as much as possible. So basically all I knew was his general age range, his time of death, and what they thought the cause of death would be. But other than that, I didn't know his family, his job, where he was from, any of that.
Now, they put, something over, a sheet or something to cover his face during the autopsy. Do they normally do that, or was that just for your purposes?
You know, I was thinking about that, actually. I think it was in deference to me, but I don't know if they suddenly realized, like, oh, there's this visitor in the room and maybe we should defer to her, or if it maybe is something they do in some cases. It was such a lovely moment that I kind of didn't ask at the time.
A lovely moment. What do you mean?
The interesting thing, I think, is when you step into the room, everything is immediately routinized. It's hard in some ways to have an emotional reaction because everybody is at work doing their jobs, running around. And so everything is kind of scientific and accounted and present for. But then there are these little moments where you realize oh, like, here's what we're actually doing. And so they were very much in the middle of just procedure and talking and teaching, and it all seemed, in this strange way, very ordinary and banal. And then suddenly we're called back into the reality of, oh, this is a person. This is a dead body in the room with a face. Mm. And so when they did that, it was this really nice act. I felt that paid homage to where we were. And then immediately after that, we were kind of back in the investigation part of it. And the oscillation between those two things is what I found so fascinating.
Many of us have witnessed autopsies in quotes on programs like NCIS or other crime procedurals. Well, I'm speaking with Rachel Wilkinson, who attended one for real at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and wrote about it for The Atlantic magazine. Well, your description of Dr. Jeffrey Nine, he's the pathologist that was conducting the autopsy you attended. I don't know, it almost made him sound like one of those TV characters, you know, throwing out really good one-liners 1 minute and then expert analysis the next. What was he like as a guide?
He was exactly like that. Extremely competent and could jump in and do anything. And yet he clearly was trying to keep it, you know, it seems almost crass to say like fun and light for the students, but there was an element of that. And then a fun fact about him that did not make it into the article is he is also a seminarian.
Really?
He is, I think, a Presbyterian minister on the weekends. And so another pathology stereotype is that they're kind of low on emotional intelligence, but he's actually known for being incredibly empathetic and communicative with families. So he can wear so many hats. And so he's, needless to say, really fantastic at his job and navigating all those different things.
Well, pathologists also have a rap, I think, for being, you know, a little bit creepy. You know, somehow their work is macabre or kept underground. What did you learn about their work?
I mean, I think I came to sympathize with them that I had no idea what a pathologist was beforehand, and then came to realize how essential they are to the medical profession and also how hidden. Because it is true that if the person biopsying a cancer sample and telling you whether it's cancer or not is them, just behind the scenes, who you may or may not talk to. So I came to appreciate that they're incredibly knowledgeable and they have to know everything, and yet we don't see them as much as we maybe could.
An autopsy is like the best anatomy lesson one could ever attend. Did it change the way that you understand the human body?
You know, it's strange. It kind of did. By the end of this, and I was not expecting this at all, I mean, I was holding organs. But it's strange to see a liver on the table, because now whenever I like have a drink or something, I can imagine myself so much more clearly as an embodied person who's finite, you know, who has like an end date. And they all told me this too, that the cliche is true, that they all feel more connected to life by virtue of the fact that they see death all the time.
Do autopsies just become run of the mill?
They do, because it's your day in, day out job and you have, you know, a script that you follow. But at the same time, there are these moments that they never really completely get past where you realize this is a person on the table and I'm confronting my own mortality. I kind of got them to speak about what brings them back to that sacred place. And they said it's things like when a body comes on the table and it has fingernail polish or a tattoo. And so those little tiny personal things are the things that kind of bring them out of this scientific space and back into the space of life.
It's so interesting. Is it an experience that you'd recommend to anyone else if they have the chance to witness an autopsy?
It's strange to say that I would, because it did change me in a way. And I do like think about it from time to time. We live in a culture now where death, talking about death, you know, any of the ugliness of death is particularly taboo and hidden. Even 100 years ago here in downtown Pittsburgh, where the morgue used to be, they used to have a plate glass window where they display bodies on the slab. And it was for people to ID victims. That was the stated purpose. But allegedly, people would like come by with their prom dates to look at the bodies.
Wowie.
Yeah, and this was true in pretty much all major cities, you know, at the end of the 19th century. Like the Paris morgue was also infamous for this. And so it's really been stripped away from the public space like that. And so they feel privileged to be kind of close to that because it's something that is locked away now. And they're sort of almost the last keeper of it. And so to get to sit in on that when it's something that we just, I mean, I guess we do on NCIS, but in a sort of not fictionalized way, interact with it. It was a privilege to get to see that along with them.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for sharing that experience with us.
Oh, thank you.
Rachel Wilkinson, she's a Pittsburgh-based writer who wrote about attending an autopsy for The Atlantic. You can find a link to read the article at wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you so much for your listening time today. There's much more to hear and explore at wordofmouthradio.org. That's where you'll find your subscription to the Word of Mouth podcast. You can also sign up for it by searching Word of Mouth NHPR in iTunes. And if you like it, please write a review or tell a friend about it. After all, the best suggestions travel by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott, and we'll be back with more Word of Mouth tomorrow at 2 here on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
Molly Donahue,
Megan Tan,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
Our intern is Fiona Shea.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR,
its Board of Trustees,
or its underwriters.
Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire
Public Radio.